Christine from Nashville, Tennessee. This is Keep Asking, the weekly podcast that helps you dive in a bit deeper and wider into the research providing insights into today's church and culture. Welcome back to our listeners. I'm Lizette Beard, and here's my Lifeway Research co-hosts, Scott McConnell and Casey Oliver. In today's podcast, we are talking about American views on morality. Guys, today's topic is so big. I wanted to come up with something like a quote that could sort of tie it all together for our listeners, but I had a hard time landing on just one, so I want to toss a few out there and get your feedback on them, all right? Everybody in? Okay, so the first one is, you have to know that as long as you love who you are, your morals, your values, that type of stuff, you're okay. Nicki Minaj. Number two, the minister of the gospel is really the yardstick by which the nation measures its morals. Jimmy Swaggart. Number three, morality is simply the attitude we adopt towards people we personally dislike. Oscar Wilde. And number four, waste no more time arguing about what a good man should be. Be one. Marcus Aurelius, a Roman emperor known for some particularly cruel practices of persecuting Christians. So, any of those really resonate?
Before he gave me the attribution, the fourth one was kind of the one that I felt like, man, that's really compelling, because I sort of think about, you know, that idea that what we don't need is necessarily to know, you know, to know more about moral, you know, morality. It's not that, hey, we really needed a good teacher, that's why Jesus came. It's that we're not good people, that's why Jesus came. He came, you know, to save us. So I felt like that was actually really compelling until then you told me this, you know. so I don't know how I'm supposed to feel about it now.
I mean, all of those sound like things we'd hear every day. And I think the fact that people are coming from those different places, gives a reason for why we run into indignant people every day, because they can't believe that we're thinking something completely different.
Right. And that it was a little bit of a rabbit hole that I could have spent hours in, but that so for so long in history, this is not certainly not something new, but people can have some very compelling, beautiful ideas, and then you're like, wait, they were a terrible person. And or, you know, I would not agree with their morals and practice. So I thought that was just kind of fascinating to get an idea of just how people can be all over the place and come from their own perspective. So tell us, what did we learn about Americans and morality?
Boy, there's so much to cover. I don't really know where to start. I guess I can just start at the beginning of sort of the order that we asked these questions in. So one of the things we found was that about 8 out of 10 Americans are concerned about the moral behavior in the United States, which I think is a number that's kind of most of them. I think if you actually kind of parse that out a little bit and said, okay, well, what are you concerned about? You know, you might kind of have pretty quickly some different perspectives there.
And we often hear a lot of evangelicals speaking up on this topic and just lamenting where the country's going. But while their number was lower, it's still fascinating that 72% of the non-religious, those that we normally refer to as nuns, atheist, agnostic, have no religious preference, 72% of them agree with this, that that they're concerned about the moral behavior of the United States. So it's something that it seems like everybody's seeing, not literally everybody to the number, but the majority of people are seeing, and they're not real comfortable with that.
All right. Well, I think one thing that stands out is, in your question, it's I'm concerned about declining moral behavior. So in my mind, there's a sense that we're asking them, it used to be better. So there's a looking back.
Mm-hmm.
Anything stand out as far as like,
I mean, I think
where people are coming, like parts of the country and in the Midwest were more likely to agree than the West. So have the West just been more tolerant? I mean, it's still a lot in the West, 76%.
And it's hard for me to know as a 30-year-old, you know, like how much of that is nostalgia for, you know, like something that was never really there, you know, versus how much of it was like, oh, yeah, there's, you know, you can point to, you know, and I think that there are plenty of things you could point to and say, this is concerning to me about the direction, you know, our morality is heading as a nation. But you just sort of wonder, you know, is it just different areas that our nation is immoral than 20 years ago, as opposed to, you know, it's more immoral than 20 years ago. And I don't feel like I can evaluate that because I was 10, 20 years ago. So
really, you can stop with the age stuff, because I'm wondering how we ever let you in. Yeah, because it's, you know, my mom will talk about when they used to never lock the doors to the house or never lock the car. You may even leave the keys in the car. Now my mom, who lives in the middle of 15 acres, not only locks her doors, but will lock the door between the garage and the house, locks her screen door. And I'm like, nobody can find you out here, you know. but certainly there are things we know that were extremely immoral, you know. So
It does seem that immoral behavior finds its way to the surface faster today through social media, through technology. You know, not only can you not get away with anything, but it's probably on video or audio, and
yes,
you'll see it again.
Right.
And so, you know, some of that may just be we're more aware of what's going on around us rather than it being hidden. And, you know, some of the young people are a little lower on this question, you know, 7 out of 10 of them noticing it. It's still something the majority of Americans are noticing.
Okay. What else?
I think, you know, we asked 3 questions about laws regulating moral standards. And so we had 44% believe it's better to have fewer laws regulating moral standards, whereas just over half believe too many laws regulating moral standards have been removed. So I think both of those kind of probably, if you're, you know, libertarian listener, you might be like, that's not how I feel, but I don't, but I think beyond both of those, where I think, you know, probably our listeners are in different perspectives as to like whether it's really good to have a lot of laws about morality or less good. I think what was neat was that third question, which is that 63% believe implementing laws to encourage moral behavior is not effective. So whether you think they should be there or not, I think that it's encouraging to me that on some level, Americans are aware that people need to be transformed from the inside out, you know, rather than just forced to behave better, you know, that that's not really effective at addressing the deeper issue.
But, you know, I mean, I'm just going to be real. I'm totally okay with some laws out there
right,
that are keeping people in line, because I don't want them to get completely unhinged. So I have some conflicting feelings, because, you know, I might want laws about speeding to be loosened up a little bit. But, you know, other laws, I'm like, tighten it on down. My qualitative researcher side really wish we had open ends to where people could give us their thoughts. I think that would be fascinating. I don't know. I'd like to see us maybe incorporate that in on something, because I think, especially when people have a strong feeling they're landing on these, I think it would be fascinating to see how different. Like, people could be agreeing on the question, but could be coming at it at totally different sets of laws. So
that's totally true. And you know, the general pattern on these are a fairly split audience of, you know, wanting fewer laws, or saying that there's too many laws have already been removed. You know, I think the reality is on the legislation side that most states have more laws than they've ever had on the books, just because that periodic cleanup that needs to happen hasn't happened recently for most states. And so they have multiple laws addressing the same thing. So, you know, while we notice that, you know, okay, marijuana might be legalized in certain places, or physician-assisted suicide might be legalized in a handful of states. And so we see some of these headline issues where the laws are receding. You know, there's still a lot of laws on the books.
Right.
We're a very regulated society. We have more people in prison than ever before. And so there's, you know, I think there's several reasons, as you were saying, Lizette, behind why somebody might respond one way or the other.
That kind of feels like almost a little like congressional approval ratings to me, you know, where you see the numbers really low, but if you could ask the follow-up, well, why, you know, like, why aren't you happy with how it's going? You know, you'd immediately get really divergent answers there, probably.
Right. So. Yeah, absolutely. When you guys, I heard you all talking about this, and you seem the most fascinated with the question about what people attributed the shaping, you know, where did they get their morals from? What the source? What was the big deal there?
I mean, so the number one, when we're saying what most shaped their beliefs, the number one answer was parents with 39%, followed by my religious beliefs with 26%. You know, having just, you know, we have, as of this recording, we have a 3-week-old child, and just sort of being aware of, like, what a great responsibility and great privilege that is to be able to encourage our children. And I think kind of a testament to that, train up your child in the way he should go. You know, not just to pass moralism on to them, but, you know, hopefully to actually really pass on your values about a passion for Jesus and loving and obeying him. And but I think it's also worth noting that there, you know, there are other influences as well, you know, and friends are another influence. And even if most people aren't saying that's the one that most influences them. So just, you know, wherever you are, you know, stage of life, you have that ability to help somebody go down, I guess, a better path. So
I find the response on my feelings about things I want to do, that seems very honest.
And we see it a little higher among young adults, those between ages 18 and 34. It's more than 1 out of 5, and actually among the youngest, it's almost a third are indicating that those, you know, what I want to do is driving, you know, what I think's right and wrong. Mm-hmm. And you know, some of that just may come with age, that they'll wisen up, but it may be a little bit of a shift in our culture of where our morals come from.
Well, and you can see it in all sorts of movies, TV shows, the Follow Your Heart. Mm-hmm. You know, that's almost driven in like a doctrine for folks. And then you want to yell out and scream, no, that's not always a good idea. you need another measuring
authority.
Stick, a plumb line, yeah. You know, because mm-hmm. your heart can tell you to do crazy things. So
we do see that more than a quarter of Americans are saying that their religious beliefs are shaping their beliefs about moral standards. And that's even higher, about 10% higher among African Americans. And so we see that culturally, you know, different parts of our society are starting in a different place, and how they're responding to, you know, some of the rules around them, and really just how they respond to whether something's right or wrong can completely come from a different place.
That, you know, I don't know if I want us to jump off here too much, but when you look at how strong of an influence that can be, parents, religious beliefs, and then think about the mixing of religions in our culture and the tension that can be bringing, or the confusion, it goes back to some things we talked about in, you know, the different worldviews. If you're really holding strongly to what your parents believe, your religious values, it's inevitable you're going to have a very strong sense of I'm right about this, you know, because people I trust, a culture I trust, and a huge reaction to people who may differ, even if it's not on the big things, but little things mm-hmm. can really jump out. And I think that is something we're going to have to be increasingly aware of and sensitive to as we navigate that, without letting go of biblical beliefs, but kind of navigating a diverse culture.
Yeah, and remaining convictional without being obnoxious about
right.
the way that we're convictional. Yeah.
Right. Uh-huh.
And I think as Americans are noticing a decline in moral behavior, we also see some pretty dramatic shifts, some shifts that happen very rapidly on whether something is a particularly moral behavior or not. And, you know, given that fewer people are looking to an unchanging standard like a religious belief, then we should expect those shifts to happen more and more rapidly, because, you know, even your opinions about what your parents told you, you know, you can, you know, what they taught you growing up is not going to change, but your beliefs about what they taught you could change today. And especially if if your moral standards are based on feelings, you know, those can change by the moment. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, as we look at our culture and what might happen to it in the days ahead, I think we do need to brace ourselves for some rapid changes.
I think that actually kind of leads into that last question we asked as well about, you know, so obviously those who are holding to a religious conviction, you know, that's probably, they're probably more likely to be thinking of an absolute standard of some sort for regarding morality. So we asked about whether something is morally right or wrong for you depends on, and we listed a whole bunch of options for them in terms of deciding that. And about half of them said nothing specific. What is right and wrong does not change. So kind of that, you know, deontological Kantian ethic of, yep, I was going to work it in. I told you.
There you go.
So, you know, so yeah, just that idea that
it's not Deion Sanders in any way.
Yeah, he started it.
And Deion Warwick.
But just that, you know, that idea that it's not about the consequences of what happens as a result of the action that makes it right or wrong. It's, you know, some things are just right and some things are just wrong. And then we also see some kind of, I guess, some more utilitarian ideas there in terms of whether the majority of people agree on it. Whether the benefits outweigh the costs, you know, those are other ideas. And then there are some very consequence-driven ones in terms of whether a person gets hurt or not, whether there is a law against it. So some consequence-minded ones, and also some that are saying, well, no matter what the consequences are, there's, you know, some things are just right and some things are just wrong.
And I don't have that one in. Oh wait, I guess I do. So that one you're looking, that was a select all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they could pick. So. Only 52%. I mean, even though that's the highest, only 52% said nothing specific. What is right and wrong does not change.
That's right. So that kind of goes to Scott's point before that, you know, that means there's about half of people out there that it can change, you know, and it probably does. So.
And what's, I don't want to be just freewheeling here, but I can... A part of me wants to question that 52% and say, oh, come on, you budge on this. But then I want to go to the other 48% and say, what kind of atmosphere are you just floating around in that, you know, there's no absolutes?
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems like you can think of so many ways where, I guess I can check off more of these than I'm comfortable admitting. Maybe that's what I want to say. That I'm like, there are things where I'll budge because of that or this.
Mm-hmm.
And you wonder how much time can you spend reflecting, like, let's line out a few core things that we're not going to do this.
Well, even that idea of like a cost-benefit sort of analysis, I think if that's really like what my main goal was in that, I think I'd be terrible at it. Like there's this, it's so hard to actually kind of going into an action say, well, I know all of the potential ways that this is going to, you know, hurt the person that I'm saying this to's, you know, friend who then gets influenced by it to say, you know, I think it's just really tough to sort of see that whole picture of, you know, there's no way I could possibly evaluate all of the potential costs and benefits of any of my actions. But I guess just even just trying to get at some of them is still something we think about sometimes when we're making decisions about right and wrong.
And we see young people doing that the most. We see more than a third of those 18 to 24 are looking to whether the benefits outweigh the cost when they go to make a decision. And we see the opposite is the case when we ask about the statement whether that right and wrong does not change. People under the age of 35, it's in the 30% range that are indicating that's what's driving their morality. Those above 45, it's in the 60% range. So twice as many older adults are looking to a single standard, whereas younger adults, those in their essentially millennials, it's less than a third are really believe there's an absolute standard to look to. And again, I think that sets us up for a very volatile moral future as a nation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's tempting to think of 65-year-olds. Part of me wants to put them all the way back to the builder generation, but that's, I mean, we're talking about, I don't have the exact years, but we're really talking about boomers now and people who were hippies. And so, you know, that hippie generation. And who really stretched as a generation stretched the boundaries and brought about a lot of change. So it's a little odd to think they're holding to more absolutes than the younger generation, or is it that because they're older than they were at that time, you're just more aware of those absolutes? And I'm just throwing things out there. I'm just tossing things out into the wind.
Like it's so hard not to with this data, especially this question, I feel like, to not start hypothesizing about, like, well, why is that? You know, and the one I was looking at even was, this is maybe changing subjects slightly, but they, which ones do they select? Some people said whether a person gets hurt, and 32% of people said that was something that mattered to them. But then whether an institution gets hurt, only 10% said that was something when they're evaluating. And so I felt like I came up with like a billion theories as to like, well, is it that, institutions sometimes feel like they're against us rather than for us, and whereas we normally have less of an adversarial relationship with people? Is it just because there's not that personal connection where, we don't care about what happens to people we're not as close to as much, so we sort of feel like it's distant? But I feel like, again, I can't say any of that from the data. I can just say there's a difference. More people care about, saying that they're harming a person than when they say they're harming an institution. But
when my mom used to say it's all fun and games until someone gets hurt, I thought that was just a lesson on consequences. It turns out that there's a lot of Americans where that's their moral compass.
Mm-hmm.
And even among the non-religious, it's pretty much their primary compass. Almost half of them are indicating that that's the thing that's driving their moral standards. And, while in one sense that's a good thing, it's honoring life, it's honoring, the dignity of people, It's not honoring to God. It's not honoring the fact that human beings are not the superior species in the universe. There is a God that deserves our respect and our honor and glorified.
And even the level that people, how do you define hurt? I mean, I very much picture a dog chasing its tail, because that's just an endless, like, there are people who get hurt about everything. And Listen, I am not letting that be my moral. Sometimes people just need to get their, maybe I'm thinking of feelings. Yeah. Maybe I'm not coming across as sensitive as I'd hope to in this. But also there are people who are not hurt hardly at all. And you really don't want to say, well, whatever they'll put up with is A-okay, because it's like, no, that mob boss really shouldn't be helping shape what is okay for you.
Well, and on the flip side of that too, I think that, I'm a person, and I think a lot of times we think of, maybe not we, but I think people think of, sin as sort of these arbitrary guideposts that God puts up to say, like, well, just don't do that, and so we're not supposed to do it.
He has some of those,
yes,
right?
Yes, but okay. But just, I think that they're for our good too, that we're,
right.
That when we're following that, like, it's to our benefit and we're glorifying God in that. And so I think, indirectly, when I say when a person gets hurt, I think I'm not necessarily aware of the fact, well, when I sin, it's, I'm hurting myself and my relationship with God. And there's all sorts of consequences that are internal that aren't necessarily, immediately evident to me from that, so I think sometimes it can be, if that's all we're thinking about is like, oh, does this, well, nobody lost an arm at the end of this decision, but that doesn't mean that there weren't real consequences from it either,
right.
Well,
and I think these are important, but then it for me, it brings home the fact that it is an endless loop of, I can't be moral enough for God.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think as my colleagues, you'd like me to keep trying, and to stay on top of things if at all possible. But in our own strength, none of us, and I think that...
Whichever standard we pick, like, we're going to fail.
Yeah. And But let's just focus on God's standard.
Yep.
But we're all going to fall short. And I think for me, there, just even as we're having this podcast moment, that's very comforting to me. Like, because times as you're looking at this, I'm like, I need to be thinking more about this. I need to be doing this. Well, yes, I need to continue thinking and growing and maturing. But then without being lackadaisical, it's like, oh, Jesus covered that. Continue growing in obedience, but it's in response to that, not to earn that or to achieve that. So I just felt like I needed to.
Appreciated it.
Yeah, good word.
Spiritual moment. I like to keep you guys on your toes. Well, anything else we need to wrap up? I think we've kind of gone over a little, but this was fun. Mm-hmm. Little philosophy, ethics, maybe just exciting days to come for the podcast. Anyway, we want to thank everyone for joining us. If you would like to quiz us on morality, philosophy, anything deontological for Casey, tweet us at SM McCon. Am I saying that right? It's S. McCon. Is that the best? S. McCon. At StatsGuy Casey or at Lizette Beard. You can also check out our research releases at lifewayresearch.com. And look forward to visiting with y'all next time. Goodbye.